Am I on?
You're on.
Good morning, everybody. Now, the source sheets that you've received today are pretty similar to the ones you had for the last 2 weeks. But we have been making headway. And I have entitled these shiurim A Portrait of Moshe Rabbeinu, and we are adding brush strokes to that portrait as we go from week to week. And there's going to be another major, major part of that great Rebbe of ours and all of Klal Yisrael, Moshe Rabbeinu, that we're going to come to this week. In the last 2 weeks, we talked about Moshe Rabbeinu going out to his brothers, throwing away everything that was his power, his prominence, his prestige. I'm not mistaken, those were the exact same three words that I used last week. His power, his prestige and prominence in the house of Paro. We got another P in there. Because he sees his brothers, the only reason why he goes out is only because of them. He would not have stepped out of the confines of the palace. He would not have left his studies. Malchus had left his studies in order to assist his brothers. And he sees there's nobody capable of standing up for them. And if there's nobody that's capable of standing up for them, then he is the one who's going to do the job. And he does it. And the next day, he goes out and he sees two Jews who are in conflict with one another, a conflict to the death. And ultimately, the two of them join. It's so difficult to believe. But maybe nowadays, it's not so difficult to believe. They turn against Moshe Rabbeinu. They betray him to Paro. It's unbelievable. They betray him to Paro. Now, what's going to be the next step in our portrait? You know, maybe just to let you know that I know that this coming week, Sedra, is Parashat. What parashat is it? Bo. So I'm going to give you something that's not on the sheet. How do you like that? We may be able to use these sheets for another week or two. I didn't say anything yet.
I just want to say one thing that I saw.
Yes?
I want to say one thing that I saw this morning. When I was driving down 443,
yes,
the sun was in my eyes that I was almost blind. When I got to Ophir, it was unbelievable. There was such a dark black cloud over it.
Over where? What's
Ophir?
Ophir?
Where the prison is, where they are supposed to, on 443. The prison from which they are supposed to release the prisoners today. It was unbelievable. It was completely
where they're supposed to release the killers,
the killers today.
And there was a dark cloud over it.
It was a black cloud, and about 2 kilometers away, it was gone, the cloud.
And if it would have been raining, it would have been heaven crying.
It was unbelievable.
Right, if I start commenting on the Jerusalem Post this morning, I'll say we'll never get into this shiur at all. Okay. I hear what you're saying. I hear what you are saying. Never. So I'm just going to give you a vignette, but I think it's a very, very important one. It's the brilliance of Rashi. And this is something that, you know, these are the things that excite me. And it's nothing is on the page. Nothing. When God appears to Moshe in Parashat Shemot at the snare, at the burning bush, twice, he says to him, I am going to bring my children to the land of the Canaanite, the Perizzite, the Hivite, the Yebusite, Eretz Zabad, Chalav, Udvash. A land flowing with milk and honey, twice. By the way, Eretz Zabad, Chalav, Udvash is going to appear another 12 times in Torah. But of the 14 times that it appears, 13 are talking about Eretz Yisrael, and one is the ugly statement in Parashat Korach, when Dathan v'Aviram say, you took us out of a land flowing with milk and honey, and you didn't bring us to a land flowing with milk and honey. You understand? Mitzrayim, the concentration camps, the forced labor, that was a land flowing with milk and honey for Dathan v'Aviram. There's nothing you can do with fellows like that except have the earth swallow them up. But anyway, so a total of 14 times, the description of Eretz Yisrael, and this is God's own, he describes it, he made up this description, and he, that's what he calls Eretz Yisrael. Heaven forfend if one should call any other country on the face of this earth a land flowing with milk and honey. Only this, he gave this man. On both occasions that it appears in Parashat Shemot, Rashi makes no comment whatsoever. What does it mean? This week said is Parashat Bo. At the end of Parashat Bo, I'll have it in one moment. Here it is. It's one of the Parashat of Tefillin for Hoya. Here it is. V'hoyon, it will come to pass, ki yivyachah Hashem el eretz haknani achite ameli achibi ve'yuzi asher nishba la'avotecha, and it will come to pass that when God will bring you to the land of the Knani, the Chiti, the Amori, the Chibi, the Yuzi, asher nishba la'avotecha, that he swore to your fathers, lotet loch, to give to you, eretz, zavas, chalav, udavash. It now appears for the third time, a land flowing with milk and honey. And now I'm looking for the Rashi. Oh, there it is, I have it. Now it's a little small for me. Zavas Chalav Udvash. All of a sudden Rashi wakes up and he tells us the meaning of Zavas Chalav Udvash. Cholav Zav Min Ha'isim. Milk flows from the goats. Vadvash and honey Zav flows min ha'tamarim, from the dates, or min ha'tainim, and from the figs. Wait a minute. Why didn't Rashi describe and define what Eretz Zavas Chalav Udvash is the very first time it appears in Torah in Parashat Shemot? And then we'll know exactly what it means throughout the rest of Torah. What did Rashi wait for the end of Parashat Bo? Good kasha? It's a very good question. I haven't seen anybody who asks the question. And since nobody asks the question, nobody answers the question. But I asked the question many years ago, it bothered me. What does Rashi wait here? You know, sometimes I meet up with people and I'll tell this word or some other kind of word, and they have some kind of difficulty. What difference does it make? What difference does it make? Heaven, for heaven's sake, Rashi was so careful with everything he did, everything he wrote. What did he wait until the end of Parashat Bo? So I said, you know what Rashi is doing over here? Rashi's brilliant. He didn't need me to say it, but this is one of the many Rashis that we see Rashi's brilliance just coming. It's unbelievable. You know what Rashi is telling us? Rashi is telling us that Moshe Rabbeinu, Moshe, our great Rebbe, was indeed an educator par excellence. You know what Rashi wants to tell us? Because of his defining what Eretz Zavas Chalav Udvash means, only here and not earlier, you know what he's telling us? You should know, since the snare, Moshe Rabbeinu never told Klal Yisrael that they're coming to a land flowing with milk and honey. Only now. Why did Moshe Rabbeinu wait until the end of Parashat Bo? You know why he waited until the end of Parshat Bar? Because of people who are falling under the burden of slavery, they're not going to hear him. It's not going to make any impression on them. It'll go in one ear and go out the other. All education calls for readiness. You have to be ready to receive the message. Here is a people that are not even ready to hear Moshe Rabbeinu when he talks about freedom. They didn't hear Moshe when he talks to them about going out of Mitzrayim. They're falling under the burden of their slavery. That's what it said last week, Sabbath. They didn't hear him. They didn't hear him. So you know, Moshe Rabbeinu waits. In Parshat Bo, they leave Mitzrayim. After they leave Mitzrayim, Mitzrayim is part of the past now. So now, you know what they're doing now? They're in the Midbar, right? In the desert, 3 million people in the desert. You know what you begin to do now? You begin to look to the future. This is the moment at which Moshe Rabbeinu tells them where God is taking you to a land flowing with milk and honey. And how does Rashi tell us this? By explaining what Eretz Zavas Chol V'Dvash means. Only here and not there. He didn't say it there because nobody was listening there. Only now they're ready to listen. Moshe Rabbeinu was the great teacher. That's what he is. And I couldn't help it now. As I looked up the Rashi of Eretz Zavas Chol V'Dvash, my eye hit the... I hit what I discovered many years ago to be an unknown Rashi. And I made it my task in life then to make sure that everybody knows this Rashi. I have about another 13.5 million Jews to go. But at least my students should know the great Rashi. A few psukim later it says, and this is also in one of the parashiyot that appears in Tefillin. I'll read the pasuk and I'll read the great Rashi. V'haya ki yivyacho Hashem el eretz haknani. And it will come to pass when God brings you to the land of the Knani, kashen nishva lecha v'lavotecha, as he swore to you and to your fathers. Unetan aloch, and he will give her to you. Listen to the great Rashi. Those last two words, unetan aloch, are unnecessary. All you have to say is when God will bring you to the land that he swore to you and to your fathers to give you. Listen to this Rashi. Tehei ve'einecho ki'ilu nitnu lecho bo v'yom. Eretz Yisrael should always be in your eyes as though God gave it to you today. Unetan aloch, he's constantly giving it to you. Eretz Yisrael has to be in your eyes as though he gave it to you. It should not be in your eyes like some kind of an inheritance that you received long ago and far away. And the Rashi. There are two Rashis in Sefer Devarim where Rashi says about Torah, that Torah should be in your eyes always as though it was given to you today. The Chol Yom, every day, it should be Be'einecha in your eyes, Chadosh, like new. Everybody knows that Rashi. The Rashi about Torah should be new in your eyes, everybody knows that Rashi. You ask them about this Rashi, they never heard it. And this Rashi is said much, much earlier in Torah than the one in Sefer Torah. Eretz Yisrael, you should thank God for Eretz Yisrael every day. All right. Now we're going to go back to the sheet. On page one, we had already learned it, but I'm going to do it again. Just one little Rashi. In number two, the second Rashi. Vayar besivlotam. He saw their suffering. He saw their burdens. Rashi says, listen to the Rashi carefully, Natan einav v'livo. He focused his eyes and heart, liyot meitzar alehem, to feel their pain and their suffering. Einav v'livo, his eyes and his heart. Okay? Now, we're moving ahead. Let's go to page 3, number 8. Number 8. And Mrs. Gold, is it a bit warm in here, or is it just me getting hot under the cover like I usually do? Is it warm in here?
Yes.
Okay. So it isn't me. Even though I do get hot under the cover when I learn a great Rashi. Okay. Number 8 is the first pasuk in Parshat Vayechi. Back to Vayechi. Vayechi Yaakov Benet Mitzrayim. Yaakov lived in the land of Egypt 17 years. Vayechi Yimei Yaakov, the days of Yaakov, Shnei Chayo, the years of his life, was 147 years he lived. Okay? Vayechi Yaakov. Rashi. Number 28, right there, Rashi. Loma Parsha Zutstuma. We had mentioned it 2 weeks ago. Why is this Parsha Vayechi, why is this passage closed? Which means that there is absolutely no pause between the end of Parsha Vayigash and the beginning of Parsha Vayechi in a Sefer Torah. It's one run-on sentence. So Rashi says, asks, why is this Parsha closed? Because once our forefather Jacob passed away, Nistemu Einayim V'Livam SheYisrael Mitzorat HaShibur. The eyes and heart of Israel were closed because of the suffering of the enslavement. SheHitchil L'Shabdam. Because once Yaakov Avinu died, the process of enslaving began. Okay, we have the two words again. Eyes and hearts are closed. Moshe Rabbeinu comes and he raises the banner of defense of the Jewish people. You know what? Nosan Einav V'Libo. He focused his eye and his heart. Okay? Number 9. Vayomer Hashem, God said, Ra'o Ra'iti Et Oni Ami Asher B'Mitzrayim. I've seen the suffering, the affliction of our people who are in Egypt. Vetzakatam shamati, and I heard their cries, with made notes of from before their taskmasters. Ki odati, because I know it, Machovav, I know his pain. Says Rashi, number 7. Ki odati et Machovav, for I know its pain. Kamo, as it says, Vayeda Elokim, and God knew, Kloma, that is to say, God is saying to Moshe, Ki samti leiv lihitbonein v'ladat et machovav, I focus my heart to understand and know his pain. V'lo he'elamti einayin, I did not hide my eyes. V'lo e'etom azni mitzakatam, and I'm not going to close up my ears to their cries. Now, which comes first over here? Thy God, it says, Lave, Rashi says, Santi lave. I focus my heart. Lave bonain v'ladat et machovav, to know his pain. V'lo helamti einayin, I didn't turn my eyes away. Interesting, huh? Heart, and then eyes. We're not finished. Later on in Parashat Shemot, it says, God remembered that Brito, that Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, Vayar Elokim et Bnei Yisrael, Vayeda Elokim. This is the Vayeda Elokim that Rashi mentioned in the previous Rashi. God saw the children of Israel and he knew. And Rashi says, number 25, Rashi, Vayeda Elokim, Natan Aleihem Lev, he focused upon them, his heart, V'lohelim ein lav, and he did not hide his eyes from them. We have four psukim now about heart and eyes. Two of them are eyes and then heart, and two of them are heart and then eyes. The two where heart precedes eyes, that's when it's talking about the Rebbe Shem himself. By Moshe and by Yaakov, Rashi says, first eyes, then heart. Is this random? Of course not. Nothing in Rashi is random. What does it mean? How are we supposed to understand these Rashis? I'm not even sure if anybody asked this question either. So in order to understand this Rashi, what I'm going to do is I'm going to take on a little journey. A little journey. Okay? The journey is on the left side. The Shem Yishmur. Looks long, not so long, and you'll be able to go through it. It's very, very worthwhile to learn this shtickle. The Shem Yishmur was the Sacher Tshuva Rebbe. He was the son, at the end of the 19th and beginning of the 20th century, one of the Gedolei Yisrael, great posei, was the Avnei Nezer. The Shem Yishmur was the Avnei Nezer son. And the Zayde, by the way, was the Kotzker. The Heilige Zayde was the Kotzker Rebbe. Okay. And you know what he's talking about in this piece? All you have to know is, it's very first pasuk in Sefer Shemot. Ve'ele Shemot b'nei Yisrael ha'boi Mitzrayimo. These are the names of the children of Israel who came to Egypt. Et Yaakov, with Yaakov, Ish u'beito bo, each one with his family. Why are two names used? It begins by talking about Yisrael. These are the names of the children of Yisrael. And then the pasuk says, Eish Yaakov, all of a sudden Yisrael turns into Yaakov. V'nira od lomar, listen to what this man is going to say. It seems that one should say, Sheshnei Hashemot, the two names, Yaakov v'Yisrael, Magbilin l'shnei minei ritzui. The two names, Yaakov and Yisrael, they correspond to the two ways of approaching God. Watch. Shem Yisrael mitzav malat ha-seichel. Shem Yisrael represents the intellectual greatness of the Jewish people. The Yisrael, and listen to this, is classic, Siddic, Kabbalistic, great stuff. Yisrael, you know what the letters of Yisrael make up? Li Rosh. I have a head. Li, to me, there's a Rosh. The letters, Li Rosh, make up Yisrael. How do you like that? So Yisrael talks about the mind of the Jewish people. As the holy Sfarim say. V'hainu, Shah Hashem Yisbarach Omar Yisrael, God says about Israel, Li Rosh. To me is the head of the Jewish people. Hainu, Shah Seikel Nirza, I receive and I accept their intellect. The Shem Yaakov, now the name Yaakov, Mitzad Mala Shukat Yisrael Shebelev. Yaakov talks about the heart of the Jewish people that longs to be a great nation. Shebezeh Mitachdim B'Haklal. It's through heart that one becomes part of Klal Yisrael. V'hainu, why? Because the Shem Yaakov Hu Hachno. The name of Yaakov means to feel humbled. To feel humbled. When one is humble, one can become a part of a greater whole. The one who's not humble sees himself as different, separate, distinct, greater, far above the multitude and the masses. But then the strength of Klal Yisrael's being united comes by virtue of the fact that there's the humility of Yaakov. Yaakov comes from Ekev, the bottom of the foot, the heel, the sole, S-O-L-E, instead, all right? V'hainu, the Shem Yaakov, the name Yaakov hu achnoah, being humbled. B'chinat Ekev, the soul. U'bazeh, shekol echad miyisrael machniat atzmo lahaklal. Our unity comes by virtue of the fact that each Jew is ready to place himself under all the rest. I'm one with you. I don't stand out above the crowd. I want to be part of this great people. Ka'anam Zal, as our rabbi said, Nimshu Yisrael is sad. The Jewish people are compared to a shepsala, a seh. Ma seh zeh, lo ka'al rosho, a seh, if you hit it on the head, o be'echod me'evorov, or another organ of the body, kol v'chol evorov margishim, every part of his body feels it. Kachem Yisrael. If a Jew at the other end of the world is attacked, we have to feel it all over the world. Every Jew has to feel for every other Jew. That's the unity of Klal Yisrael that comes from the name Yaakov. Bozeh mitachdim, this is how they are united. Bechol tshukos Yisrael heim tshuka achas, and all of the desires, or the goals, the objectives of Klal Yisrael are all one. If you don't have the midah, the personality and character trait of humility, you can't be united. Everybody wants to be the boss. Everybody wants to be the head of the party. Everybody wants to be the leader. You know how many prime ministers we have in this country? 6 million? Right? Yeah, no, we're not that bad. We're pretty good. I take it back. We're pretty good. We have remained a united people, most of us united anyway, under the most difficult of circumstances. And every day there's another difficult circumstance. Shebilting midas achmo, without that measure and that personality trait of humility, because otherwise everybody wants to be the head of the pack. Balkane, therefore, hitagdut Yisrael, the unity of the Jewish people, nikreit b'shem kihilat Yaakov. A unified people are called kihilat Yaakov, not kihilat Yisrael, kihilat Yaakov. Because what is it that unites them? The midah of Yaakov, the midah of humility. You know, I'm ready to bend my own needs for the greater welfare of the cloud. So the Shem Yishmuel, the Heilige Shem Yishmuel, goes on and he says, "V'nei Yisroelim Mitzrayim ha'yutzrichun miruk l'ma'alatam." They had to be cleansed and purified in order that they should achieve their greatness of Rosh, Yisrael, and Yaakov. U'l'umat shnei minei hamalot, ho'yu Yisrael mishubodim tachat yab paro v'tachat yab Mitzrayim. Jews were enslaved, two kinds of slavery. One is the slavery to Paro, and the other is the slavery to Mitzrayim. And they're different. They're different. Ukmo Shoma Yisro is going to say, when he comes to Moshe, he says, Baruch Hashem, blessed is God Hashem, Hitzilatem, who saved you, Miyad Mitzrayim, Umiyad Paro. He saved you from the hands of Egypt and from the hands of Paro, because these were two different kinds of enslavement. Upirish Rashi, Rashi says over there, Mitzrayim, he saved you from Mitzrayim, Umo Kosha, a difficult, difficult nation, and Paro Melech Tarshish, a difficult and tough king. Harei Shashivut HaYakaful. That means, therefore, that their enslavement was a double enslavement. An enslavement to Paro and an enslavement to Mitzrayim. See right away what it means. Harei Shashivut HaYakaful Mityaches related to Mitzrayim Levad. Mitzrayim is one thing and Paro is another. V'hainu. She'erach HaMelech. What is the king considered? The king is considered the head of his people. Paro represents the belief, the mindset, the intellectual status of Mitzrayim. V'hainu she'erach HaMelech, the value of the king, l'umat ham, in comparison to the people, who ke'erach harosh v'haseichel, the head and the mind, l'umat haguf v'halev, the body and the heart. The people are the body and the heart. The king is the rosh and the intellect. Ah, v'alkein, therefore, ma'alat haseichel she'v'yisrael ha'nikra v'shem Yisrael, nitmar ko tachat yad paro. That intellectual greatness of the Jewish people is going to emerge because of the shibut to Paro. We're going to overcome the Paroness. Malat haseichel shel Yisrael nikra b'shem Yisrael nitmar ko tachat yad Paro u'malas hatshuka shel Yisrael. The desire to be one people, hamechuneh b'shem Yaakov, that's called Yaakov, nitmar ko tachat yad Mitzrayim. That came because we were under the people of Egypt. Behind you, the power of the Chashev Gadol, who became a tomb of our Yisroel, Pilal HaSeifer to Yisroel. Paro was a great sorcerer, a magician, and therefore with the impure spirit and his idolatry, he darkened the intellect of the Jewish people. Umitzrayim b'sar, chamorim b'saram. The Egyptian people were an extremely sensual, physical people. Mush, when you spell the Chukot Rod, they drew the Jewish people toward the evil. Abu Yisrael, you know what happened? We happened say, Iver. It came in. We emerged unscathed intellectually from the influence of Paro, and we emerged physically and emotionally unscathed from the hands of Mitzrayim. Our Yisrael nimzu shleimim v'lo nimzu u'besichlom. They were not drawn intellectually after Paro. And neither were they led by the desires after Mitzrayim. The fear Omar, and according to what we said, Yeshua Farish, Mamra Kosit, Shiftiach Hashem Li Yaakov. Now we can understand what the pasuk says when God promised Yaakov, Vo'anoki El Chogam Olo. I will bring you up, yet up. El Chog, twice El Chog. Like when Yaakov is on his way down to Mitzrayim the first time, he stops in Beersheba, and there God appears to him at night and says, "Al tira minedom Mitzrayimo, don't be afraid of going down to Egypt. Onochi eireid imcha, I'm going to go down with you. Va'onochi eelcho gam olo, I'm also going to bring you up." Hainu, so he says, "She Yaakov nisyada, what was Yaakov afraid of?" He was afraid Penchas to show him it mashu bono b'mitzrayim heim b'seichel achaparu v'heim b'tshuka achamitzrayim. Yaakov was terrified, he was petrified that his children in Mitzrayim are going to be drawn to the intellectual mindset of a Paro and to the base desires of the Egyptian people, and they will be assimilated and lost in its time. Until they will become completely assimilated, and they're going to be unworthy of redemption. He was worried what's going to happen with his kinderlach in that Mitzrayim. That's why God promised him ba'aliyah kifula, a double aliyah. V'koya Yisrael Zaroach Rav, and it's talking about Yisrael, his children who come after him. Chein nami, this is farei simen ha'gula v'bekidot kifula, shero mezeh l'shnei in yanim elu. There's another double term that is used. Pakod Yifkod Elokim Etchem. God is going to remember, he shall remember you. He's going to remember you to remove you from beneath the intellectual devastating effect of a paro and the emotional and physical devastation effect of the Egyptian people. Lefiha Omer, and therefore according to what we said, Yitparesh HaKastuv, we started off with that first pasuk in Sefer Shemot, Ve'ele Shemot Bnei Yisrael, Aboy Mitzrayim, Eit Yaakov. These are the names of the children of Israel with Yaakov. So we ask, why the two names in one pasuk, Yaakov and Yisrael? Hainu Shebelechtam BeGolot. When they went down into Golos, the pasuk was talking about these are the names of the children of Israel who came with Yaakov to Mitzrayim. That when they came down to Mitzrayim, Shebelecht on the Golos, when they went into exile, Hit Azru Bekol Tokefios, they girded themselves and prepared themselves with all their strength and all of their might. Bechol Bekinatam, in all respects, they made it their decision that I'm not going to assimilate. Leval Yitam, they should not become assimilated into Egypt. Chas v'sholom, the Mitzrayim. Shmot b'nei Yisrael, when it says these are the names of the children of Israel, that's talking about the intellectual greatness of the Jewish people. That should not be lost in Mitzrayim. Himarat ha'seichel, v'al zeh ne'amar shmot, v'lo shem lehorot shehu, ma'alat ha'prat kanal, Bemalachim lekulam shemot yigra et Yaakov hu malat haklal kilat Yaakov. When it says Yaakov, it's talking about the unity of the Jewish people, the physical. We're all one. We're the shepseller. You hit one, we all feel it. Vinei, right? No, we don't. I think. No, you know what? I'm gonna do the next piece soon. How do you like that? Watch this, you know. A great Rebbe, great thinker. Vine Shabbos hi gu'ula, v'chol ha'gu'os k'fulos, b'morach u'b'lev. He was talking about Shabbos. Shabbos is a source of redemption. The Jew is redeemed every Shabbos. Shabbos is a taste. Me'ein olam haba. Chol ha-gulot, all gulot are double. One of the two gulot, the moach, who believe. Do you see where I'm going? The mind and the heart. Ayin represents the mind. Ein Yisrael. Ayin and leiv. That's the Rashi by Yaakov. It's the Rashi by Moshe. Nosan ein of Velipo, mind and heart, ukemo pekida kufula, just like the double pekida b'mitzrayim, upekida Rabbi Eliezer, sheosios manzapach kol osak kufula mora al gulam yuchedet. Oh, this is so beautiful. Oh, this is so. How do I even think of not learning this video? The Gemara says the following. The Gemara at the beginning of the Sefer Megillah, manzapach. You don't know what the word means. There is no such word. Gemara says, man tzapach was said by the prophets. What's man tzapach? The real meaning of man tzapach is one of the letters that we have, one letter in the middle of the word and one at the end. Mem, mem sofit. Nun, nun sofit. Tzadik. Tzadik sofit, right? Two different letters. Okay? Pei, two different letters. Chaf, two different letters. Man tzapach, the double letters. And the Gemara really explains that what the Nevi and what the prophet said, another, it was obviously given in Torah because the Torah had to be written with the two different letters. The middle of the word letter and the end of the word letter. But it was the Nevi'im who reminded Klal Yisrael which letter goes in the middle and which goes at the end. But Chachmei HaKabbalah went one step further. Mansapach are the double letters. Every geula is a double geula. Anochi el chogamolo, pakol pakaditi. Ayin, seichel, and leiv. Moach and feelings. Mansapach represents our geulot. Watch this. Kol ot va'ot akfula. Every double letter, moda al geulam yuchedet, teaches us about a special geula. Chof. That was the ghoul of Avon. Lech lecha. Lech lecha. Tzaddik is the ghoul that is to come. The Nehidu Yemenu. Ish tzemach shemo umitachtav yitzbach. Tzemach is Moshiach ben David. Tzaddik umitachtav yitzbach. All of these gulos that are represented by double words, kulam hein al derech echad, they all mean the same thing. For Shabbos, shehu gula yesh bo nami shneho inyonim, Shabbos, which also represents the gula of the Jew, Shabbos delelia, the Shabbos at night, shebezor hakadosh, Shomor de Zohar v'Shomor. Shomor is at night, and Zohar is Yom. Ushmira hibleiv. Shomor is something you keep in your heart. Ki no'im ki fish v'leim v'vidnecho. It's pleasant to keep them in your heart. V'Zohar hu b'morach. Zohar is the mind. B'morach ha'zachira. U'be'emet, Zohar v'Shomor v'dibur echad. Zohar and Shomor that represent Ayin and Lev, Moach and Heart. It's unbelievable. This is unbelievable. They're all they go together. Hayim Shamidos Kula Zubazu Alkein Kiddush Hayom. We learn from Zohar Kachir. Let me get back to the Rashi's now. Question number one is, when it's Yaakov and Moshe, I is first and heart is second. Nosan Einav Velibo. He focused, Moshe goes out there and he focuses his eye and his heart. The eye represents the idea that he's looking to see what do they need. How can he help them? Intellectually, he wants to know what's the correct approach, what should he do? And the lave is that which compels him to act. Moshe Rabbeinu therefore represents the beginning of redemption. Because what was it that had happened with the death of Yaakov Avinu? You know what was closed? The mind and the heart. Nistamu einayim v'libam. When it talks about God, in both cases where it talks about the Revelation, you know what it says? It says heart first. Remember the Rashi's over there? By the Revelation? Yodati et nachova. Samti leiv. Lives bonevo adat et bakova. God says, my heart. My heart compelled me to see their suffering. And then I saw what to do. The last verse over there, number 10. Natan aleihem leiv. God knew. He focused his heart upon them. V'lo helim einav. And he did not hide his eyes from them. You know what I want to say? As far as the prevention is concerned, the opposite. What is every bracha, Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu, Melaholah. What's the difference between Hashem and Elohim, Elokeinu? Hashem is the merciful, compassionate God. Elohim is the God of justice. And that's why in Parashat Mishpatim, we're going to find out that judges are called Elohim. In the first story of creation, in Parashat Bereshit, exclusively only one name is used, Elohim. When the second story of creation it begins, and it says, Ela Toldot Hashemayim Biyom Biro Hashem Elohim, the day on which God, Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei Elohim, created the world. All of a sudden, there's another name added. And Rashi says that originally God's intent was to create a world that would live by law, by din, Elohim. But he saw that it's impossible. The world will never survive if it's going to be a world of law. All law has to be tempered with mercy, compassion, understanding. That's Yud-Kei Vav-Kei. What really is the difference between Yud-Kei Vav-Kei and Elohim? That name of four letters, Yud-Kei Vav-Kei, is the personal name of God. He has a last name and he has a first name. His name Elohim is known to a whole world, but he entered into a special relationship with the Jewish people, and that special relationship, we know him on a first name basis, Yud-Kei Vav-Kei. Yud-Kei Vav-Kei is the God of mercy and compassion. So therefore, second story of creation talks about God who created Hashem Elohim, created. So it's not only that he added mercy and compassion to the world, the mercy and the compassion precede Din. Hashem comes before Elohim. In a bracha, Baruch Ato Hashem Elokeinu. And Elokeinu is Melech HaOlam. Elokeinu is, this is law, this is justice. A God who demands that Yud-Kei Vav-Kei is one who looks with compassion, with kindness upon his people. Classic. Avinu, Malkeinu. We never say Malkeinu, Avinu. Avinu, Malkeinu. Our father is represented. Our father has compassion. A melech is demanding. Avinu is Yud-Kei Vav-Kei. Malkeinu is Elohim. That's what Rashi's telling us. When we're describing how the Rebbeinu looks at the suffering of the Jewish people in Egypt, you know what he begins with first? Libo! It's his heart that's breaking. And then Ayin. How are we going to get them out of there? Yaakov Avinu begins the other way around. He first has to see what's happening. And then he begins to feel the sense of great compassion that is required in order to save the Jewish people. So that's what the Shem Yishuel was telling us here. The Yisrael represents the Moach, the intellect. Yaakov represents the heart. Moshe Rabbeinu is the one who uses Yisrael and Yaakov. The first thing is his intellect. Dasam Einav. He looks and sees what's happening and he understands. And then the next step is going to be Yaakov begins to operate. His heart beats together with them, and therefore he now must begin to do whatever has to be done in order to save the Jewish people. And nothing is going to stand in his way. I have a few more brush strokes. I'm dipping my, what do you call it?
Paintbrush.
The paintbrush. I'm dipping the paintbrush. I want to tell you a great thought of Rav Soloveitchik that I use also to explain Eino V'Libo, but I'm always afraid. You don't have anything here. You only have a pasuk and a rashi. I'm always afraid of not doing justice to the Rav. You can, but I'll give you some broad brush strokes of the Rav. There's a fascinating machlokes that appears in Medrash between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yoshua. These two disagreed about a lot of things. And one of the things that they disagree about, and the Rav says that they really don't disagree. The Medrash says, asks, "May ayin hi hachokhma, where is wisdom? You don't have it? Don't look. Where does wisdom come from?" Rabbi Eliezer says, wisdom comes from the heart, from the mind. Bachosh, then he brings a pasuk. Then Yeshua said, no. Wisdom is belave. Wisdom is in the heart. So the Chof says, they don't disagree. You need both mind and heart. One without the other is a disaster. And he begins to describe, as the Chav usually does masterfully, he describes two types. There is what he calls Chochmas HaRosh. There's wisdom of the head, and there's wisdom of the heart. Chochmas HaRosh and Chochmas HaLev. And he describes the fellow who has Chochmas HaRosh, who has wisdom of the head, is the Geuser intellect. Understand? God save us from greiser intellects. He has everything figured out. He knows everything. He studied everything. He's bright. He's brilliant. He may even have passed the point of genius, which is, of course, the point of no return. From there on and further, it's all disaster. All right. And here it is, this man of Chochmas HaRosh. The Rav describes him as somebody who's interested only in the utilitarian. What can I do? What can my wisdom do for me? Where does it get me? And if this wisdom doesn't get him any place practical, he discards it. He's totally uninterested in it. The man with Chochmas HaRosh is, he describes him as somebody who's absolutely ruthless. Because to him, there's no such thing as my native land. We're all men of the whole world. The man who has great intellect, the whole world is his oyster. There's no such thing as becoming sentimental about a little piece of land, you know, someplace between the Mediterranean and the Jordan. Give me a break. We're not interested in that. On the contrary, what should we be interested in? When the Rav wrote this, they still haven't found oil off the coast of Eretz Yisrael. We're going to be a great energy power in the next 10 years, finished. Okay, but meanwhile, what is it? It's an arid land, nothing grows. This, you can date already what the Rav is saying. You can date it back 50 years, you understand? When I was living on tomatoes and cucumbers, we didn't have much else to eat, all right. So the one who has wisdom of the head, he calls him an intellectual nomad. He's not rooted any place. He describes it, very beautiful description. Can you imagine living in a hotel your whole life? Can't. You know what you want after a few days in a hotel? I want my own home, my own kitchen, my own bed. I want to be home. My wife and I, we were off in a hotel the end of last week, a three-day weekend in Tveria. There was a conference on the Rambam. Last week was the Yahrzeit of the Rambam, and now for the last 5 years, the Shabbos closest to the Yahrzeit of the Rambam, Tveria, the Rambam is buried in Tveria. You understand? The Rambam is buried in Tveria. So they had, there were over 500 people there. It was really, and there were great lectures and great shiurim. Kidney, Rambam, Rambam. And then we were thinking, well, we go home Matzah Shabbos, or we go home Sunday morning. I don't like traveling at night. You know what happened after Havdalah? I want to go home. And my wife says, yeah, I want to go home too. And we had a lovely room. The room looked out on the Kinneret. God, it was unbelievable, the Kinneret. It's so full of water, it's unbelievable. The fella who has Chochmas HaRosh, who's completely intellect, has no home, has no people, has no loyalties to anything except himself. He's the spiritual nomad. Nowhere. Chochmas HaRosh is not enough. You need Chochmas HaLev. Chochmas HaLev is the person who feels, who emotes, who knows what it means to have his own land, his own family, his own people. These emotions are powerful. You know what one is? One is Yisrael. The other is Yaakov. One is Moach, and the other is Lev. Moshe Rabbeinu, Nosan Eino V'Livo. His intellect and his heart, the two of them together. One without the other is a disaster. But as I say, as far as the Rabbeinu Shlomo is concerned, him in his relationship to mankind in general, and to his people in particular, everything begins with heart. He's Avinu Malkeinu. He is Hashem Elokeinu. And Rashi points it out so beautifully by virtue of the fact that when he talks about God, it mentions heart first and eye second. Talking about Moshe and Yaakov and Klal Yisrael, there it's mind first and heart. We begin with mind and then we add heart to it. You know what? There was one thing I wanted to say at the conference. Nobody asked me to speak. You know, I survived it. Not only survived it, I enjoyed it immensely.
It was a humbling experience.
Huh?
A humbling experience.
It was a great experience. I didn't have to speak. But there was one thing I would have said if they would have given me just 2 minutes. It very understood. Celebrates the Rambam. Let me tell you just a little story. There's a Jew who lived in this country many years ago who was, I would say he was looked upon like he's an absolute nut, a zealot. His name was Amram Bloy. Amram Bloy, Neturei Karta Sheva Neturei Karta. Don't ask. I don't know how it happened, but in early 56, I arrived in Tveria. I had been learning in Panovich. I think it was probably I needed a break, and I was learning so. Oh, Basmuk, I needed a break. So I came with my chavrusa, we came to Tveria. We come to Tveria at the bus station, we see Amram Bloy, and about 30, 40 of his cohorts, his brigade, the big religious terrorists. What did he come for? He had come because the city was planning on either moving the Rambam's caver or having a highway going over the caver or doing something with that caver. And he stood there. They're gonna have to move the Rambam over his dead body. And you know who stood there right next to him? Who?
You.
Me. And it was amazing, you should know. The man was a gentle, gentle soul. I stayed with them for a whole day. At night we slept in a shul someplace. He made sure that I had what to eat. I shouldn't go hungry. He was so concerned about me. Poor American soul lost over here in Eretz Yisrael. So I just want to say, Tiberia, you understand, prides itself on the Rambam. Conferences about the Rambam. From all over the world, they come to the Rambam. There wouldn't be a Rambam there if not for Balmer play. That's all. And when I get a chance next year, Gesunde Heid, I'm just going to give a clap off and Tish. I'm going to get up there and I'm going to say, listen, all you guys. Big Kanoi, you owe him a debt of gratitude. That's it. All right, everybody. Yes. Call Yom Hayom. The end of Hashem. No.